Welcome to this week's edition of Focus Fridays here on WKLM. Focus Fridays is being brought to you by Hobrins Insurance, Home Siding, Rohde's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerine Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays here on WKLM, and joining with me today, I have Holmes County Municipal Judge Andrew Hyde.
Coming in today and joining in with us for our Focus Friday this week.
Sure, I'm glad to be here.
And so, as we announced in the intro, you are the municipal judge for Holmes County. How long have you been sitting in that position?
I was appointed by the governor in November of 2016. I then had to run in the next election to maintain the seat and then run when Judge Irving's term expired. When she passed on, the procedure in Ohio is the governor will appoint somebody based upon recommendations of the local central committee. So three of us went down to the governor's office for interviews. I was appointed and then have had to run twice. Now I guess it's been about 10 years since I've been on the bench.
And so since that was kind of an appointed position, what made you say, I want to step into this ring and go in for the judge's position?
I started practicing law around 1994. I put an office in Loudonville. And so by the time Judge Irving started getting ill in 2015, 2016, I'd been practicing a little over 20 years. A lot of trial work, a lot of real serious cases, real nasty trials, and as much as I enjoyed that work, I was getting a little burned out. And then when I talked with Judge Irving, she told me she was not going to be around much longer, and so we talked about maybe me trying to take over when she left. I thought switching to judge was a nice way to finish out my career.
And so you kind of mentioned being a lawyer. How did you get started in law? What made you even go in that direction?
A lot of crooked paths led to that. I had a forestry degree from Ohio State, where I met my wife my last quarter at Ohio State. Had worked with the Forest Service, had worked with sea turtles in Florida, and really felt like as much as I enjoyed the outdoors and natural resources, I thought natural resource law was an area where I would have some impact. And I thought it was something I wanted to get into. Did some research, and Lewis and Clark College out in Portland, Oregon had, at the time, the best environmental law program out there. And so I applied. My grades were not great from college, but I had the Forest Service experience, the sea turtle experience. And so to get into a natural resource law program, I had what they were looking for to let me in. So I went out there. And after a year of law school, I realized environmental law was the most boring type of law there was. That I was going to be in Washington, D.C. dealing with 1,000-page statutes. And I thought, oh, no, now what do I do? I borrowed money to attend a year of law school and realized it's not what I want to do. So I got into some trial practice classes and got interested in criminal law and then basically spent another year in Portland and then transferred to Ohio State University to do my last year of law school. At that point, knowing I was going to open up an office in Loudonville. So I knew I wanted to come back to Ohio. So I did my last year at Ohio State and sent the grades back to Lewis and Clark. So I graduated from Lewis and Clark in Portland, but started practicing in Loudonville as soon as I got out.
And so that's a really big change from forestry to environmental law to now municipal judge.
Yeah.
That's a very wide range.
Yeah, and I think any experience is good experience for a judge. Anything dealing with people. You know, we mentioned before we went on the record, the service industry, food industry, retail. Any experience like that, dealing with people and helping you to understand people, is good experience for the position I'm in. I didn't need my forestry degree. To be honest, I don't know that law school even does much to prepare you to practice law other than teaching you how to research law. But once you've learned that, I really think successful lawyers are people that understand people and know how to deal with people.
It does come down to a people position because it's their livelihood that you're going to make or break by being their lawyer or their judge.
Well, sure, and certainly with trial work, you know, and that's what I enjoyed. I did a lot of trials and a lot of jury trials in my career. You have to be able to talk to a jury. And so there are a lot of smart lawyers out there that can't talk to a jury, can't talk to real people, can't talk to anyone that's not a lawyer. So they don't really equate into good trial lawyers because they don't understand that principle of you've got to convince somebody you're right. It doesn't matter whether you're right or wrong, you've got to convince somebody. And if you can't, then you probably should be doing something else.
So they're more nerdy than
people-y. Yeah, there's brilliant, you know, tax lawyers and estate planners and, you know, that sort of thing, but they're scared to death of a courtroom because that's where they have to talk to 8 or 12 citizens and try to convince them of their position, which some people can't do.
And you said you wanted to come back to Loudonville to do all this. What made you want Loudonville? It's kind of small and...
Yep, and it's... I fell in love with a Loudonville girl. Her family's been Western Holmes County for generations. They were Loudonville School District. And I actually took her to Montana. I wanted to live in the mountains, and we went out to Montana. And it was a little far from her family farm. So the next summer, I went to Vermont to find a job in Vermont, and that was still far from the family farm. So I thought, well, let's compromise. I'll come down and look at the area. When I got down here, I thought, well, this is beautiful. It's not the mountains I thought I'd live in, but, you know, Western, well, any part of Holmes County, it's just this gorgeous country here. So
very Appalachia-y.
Yes, but in a good way. It's a nice area, great place to raise kids and grow up. And we've been here over 30 years now and been perfectly happy.
Now, you were a lawyer before. As a judge, you don't get to do any lawyering stuff anymore, correct?
Right. We're not allowed to. Once you become a judge, you can't become an advocate. And so, yeah, over the years, I will get calls from friends and, you know, family or previous clients, you know, hey, can you help? And I hate having to say, no, I'm sorry, I can't. But I try to send them on to someone that can.
And you know people.
Yeah. After 30-some years of practicing law, you get to know. And you know which lawyers to refer someone to and which ones not to, but yes.
Exactly. Well, we've got plenty more to learn here with Judge Andy Hyde. I'm Melissa Patrick for Focus Fridays on WKLM. Welcome back to Focus Fridays here on WKLM. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays here with Judge Andy Hyde from the Municipal Court here in Holmes County. And Andy, let's talk about what is municipal court. What kind of cases do you see in your courtroom?
The municipal court handles criminal and traffic matters. The criminal cases we see are called misdemeanors. So common pleas court handles the felonies. Those are the much more serious charges. Those are the ones that allow for prison. So misdemeanor charges allow for jail, not prison. The majority, the most serious misdemeanor criminal cases have a penalty maximum of 6 months in jail. There's a couple that allow for a year. So most traffic offenses, criminal misdemeanors. Municipal court also has a civil division. So a lawsuit up to $15,000 we would see in municipal court. And then we also have a small claims division that has civil matters as a maximum of $6,000 claim. And small claims is designed where you wouldn't need a lawyer. You file your complaint and we set it for a trial. And the other person comes in and we sort of have a knockdown, drag out fight in court and resolve
nice
it that day.
Discussions.
I wish it was just nice discussions. But it can get pretty brutal. The neighbor disputes and the long-standing disputes that try to get resolved in court usually have a lot of their underlying issues that I can't help them with. But the civil suit's up to $15,000. That usually involves lawyers, a lot of collection cases from the credit card companies and that sort of thing. You're entitled to a lawyer, file an answer, do discovery, you know, ask questions of the other side. So small claims is sort of streamlined. Just you file a complaint, give the side the trial to be heard. The civil stuff up to $15,000 can take a year sometimes to get resolved.
Oh, wow, that's a lot of time.
Well, the attorneys usually need time to, you know, ask questions of the other side, ask for discovery, ask for paperwork, that sort of thing. And I don't rush them. I mean, the Supreme Court wants us to move cases along quickly, and I've got the luxury that I could do that if I wanted to, but it really forces people to move at a speed, at least attorneys, faster than they're comfortable. So I don't mind letting that go a little longer if they need the time. If they request it, I'm okay with it.
And for those that have not ever been into court, discovery is basically the evidence and the facts and the information, correct?
Yeah, in a civil case, you can ask the other side to give you evidence, give you documents. You can ask them questions that they have to answer. So discovery is the general term for that process of getting the information you want to proceed to trial or getting information from the other side to see what they have before you go to trial. And that's why those cases move a little slower.
Well, because I'm sure some of those are really hard to prove.
Yeah, they can be. And so you have a burden of proof in that, not the same burden in a criminal case, but you still have to be able to prove your case. It's not enough to give you a judgment just because you filed. You've still got, at some point, be able to prove facts behind your complaint.
And that's where the importance of having a judge in court comes in, because Susie could say, well, Jane, I gave her this or this much, or what have you, and there's no proof of any of it. And so now it comes to somebody to really look at the people mm-hmm. and what they can try to put out there.
Yeah, we had an interesting case where a collection credit card was in default. They went to a law firm that buys those debts, and then the law firm collects on them. And they sued a local gentleman for an unpaid credit card. Well, the defendant was an Amishman who'd never had a credit card. Somebody had used his information to get a card, spent a lot of money on the card, and by the time it was ready for default and a company bought that debt to sue on it, this Amish guy came in court and said, I don't know what any of this is. I never had this credit card. And it was nice because this is the first time somebody from that side saw the defendant, had a chance to ask him questions, and realized that this was, you know, credit card fraud and not the right defendant to be in court.
So it was a whole different kind of case now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So something like that, because of being fraud, would that go to common pleas then? Or would
Don't know who had the credit card. All the bills were still in this Amishman's name. So whoever was using this card bought whatever they wanted to buy and was gone. And the only name they had was this gentleman who'd never had a credit card in his life. So it's fraud, but it'll never be discovered. The Amishman had no idea who would have done that. Somebody either got his mail or got some information from him and filled out the application.
Now, this day and age, is that something you see more often happening?
See some of it, yeah. And it's frustrating because with a lot of work, those cases can still be resolved because you can find out where the purchases are. You can try to get video of the person making the purchase. And usually the prosecutors, law enforcement are just so overwhelmed. They kind of treat those things as civil. The companies charge enough to cover for those losses. And you don't see that intensive investigation you'd like to see in those kind of cases, because it affects all of us. I wish they could catch every time someone does something like that, but it's a lot of work.
Because the more people that get caught, the less likely more people are to want to do it. Yeah. It's like, oh, I can get in trouble for this.
Yeah, sometimes people need to see inside of a jail to realize what they've been doing isn't appreciated.
And so you also made a comment, because we're all about learning here, about jail versus prison. Jail is your local county jail. Mm-hmm. Prison is where lots of people come together.
Yeah, there's several prisons around the state handling inmates from different counties. Most counties have their own jail or have an agreement with a neighboring county to use their jail. So yeah, that houses the local, less serious offenders.
So it's a little less dangerous for those light offenders.
Yes, we have an assault case. So an inmate assaulted another inmate here in our jail. It's a pending case now, and he was charged, where a lot of that stuff that happens in prison, they don't charge every time. So, yeah.
And so we also talked a little off air when we were trying to kind of figure out where we were going with this. Your term is 6 years, where most elected officials are 4 or 2.
Yeah, judges are 6. So I don't know when that was put in place. I think the thinking behind that is you don't want to have to keep trying to re-campaign and hold on to your position, get elected, not worry about it, and just do your job. So my most recent term started January 1st of this year and will go for 6 years.
And if you're in the middle of a case, that will throw... How does that even work? If you are in the middle of a trial or something like that and your term limit comes up, do you have to make sure to schedule those so that doesn't happen? Or...
Most cases can be handed off to another judge. You know, unless there's been a trial, another judge should be able to step in and take over from day one. Nothing would really stop or change in a case. A lot of times if I have to be gone, you know, we'll have an acting judge come in to cover court, and they'll just take whatever cases are set that day. So the case doesn't really belong for the judge from start to finish. It's in that court from start to finish, but other judges can come in. So the bad judges, the ones who get voted out and don't have a very good history of doing their job, will sometimes leave their most complicated cases and get out, and the new judge comes in to a slam docket of terrible cases and issues, motions that need resolved. Yes, and so that's it can be done that way if a judge doesn't care about who's taking over after them.
But you try to get things in a reasonable manner. And with some of the cases you said you did some of the worst as a lawyer, I'm sure as a judge you don't mind those.
I don't mind those. Having had that type of career, I like the cases that involve intricate issues, research, or jury trials. I like the air of a jury trial when lawyers are trying to convince a jury. So that doesn't bother me. I've always enjoyed that. It's hard. I have nothing sitting on my desk that needs to be done for tomorrow. We have enough of a time in this county with our docket that most cases I can resolve and do the entry that day and not have to do anything tomorrow. So we're not behind. We're not scrambling to get stuff done. Everything is moving at a pace that is just perfect for the job.
Now, you filled in as a municipal judge, and that's how you got in the position. Is that the type of judge that you would like to stay for the rest of your career, or would you consider or prefer being like the common pleas or the probate?
No, before Sean took the job in common pleas, you know, that seat was going to be open, and people asked if I was interested in running for that position, and politest way to say it is no chance. I don't remember my wording, but no part of me wanted Sean's job. I'm glad he has it. He's a good judge. There's something about municipal court I just really enjoy. It's informal. We have fun. But at the same time, we have enough time in this county to address each case, address each defendant. I'm real happy where I'm at. I've got no desire to change.
I feel like you have to be one of the few judges to say we have fun.
I think I have fun when I'm hitting my thumb with a hammer to work around the house. Maybe it's the outlook you have that controls whether or not it's fun or not. I enjoy the job. And if someone says something, my first response is usually thinking of some sarcastic response to them, which I have to make sure I don't say, but that's who I am personally. So yeah, I think maybe I can make situations fun that most people wouldn't find fun.
Yeah, and that's part of that human experience. And to know you enjoy your job means that you're not just sitting there making decisions in just anger and unhappiness.
Yeah, yeah. You take an oath not to use sympathy or emotion when you're a judge. And I realize it's not about me. I'm taking this seat in the county that someone else left that I started, and the day I leave, retire, die, or whatever, another judge is going to be there the next day continuing on the process. So all I'm doing is holding a seat for a specific term to do the best I can do. It's not about me. I know some judges love to strut around town, wear their robe whenever they can, and shake everybody's hand, and I'm not that way. I like to do my job and go home, and I'm not campaigning every day that I'm here for the position.
Well, that's one of the things you won't see our judges walking around in their robes unless they're in court.
Yeah, we have a very good county and very good judges. I like how the three of us do our jobs right now.
And we've got more to discuss here with Judge Andy Hyde on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM. We're going to step back in here with Judge Andy Hyde on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM. And we've been learning about you as a judge and how you got into the judge's position. Definitely an interesting, less common track of getting there. And so you were a lawyer right before being a judge. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't say just before, because you've done multiple things.
For a week or two, yeah.
How was that transition going from being a lawyer to a judge?
The fact that I was a trial lawyer made that transition real easy. So for 20 years, I was trying cases in all counties all over the state. Really enjoyed that. And I thought, I've had so many jury trials as a lawyer that the switch to judge should be effortless. And when you become a judge in Ohio, they do send you to a new judge school, which was 6 days of training. Because some judges maybe have a criminal background or some have a civil background. They try to bring everyone up to speed on what you need to know as a judge. But I had spent so much time in courtrooms around the state. I had seen good judges, bad judges. I knew what was required of a judge, the kind of judge I wanted to be. And I was comfortable. But I remember the first jury trial we had when I was judge. You know, everyone walked into the courtroom and sat down. And I have heard judges do their same speech for 20 years and knew what my role was. And all of a sudden, everyone sat there and was looking at me. And I thought, oh, wait, okay, now what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to say? It all just went blank, and there's 50 people sitting there looking at me, and I thought, oh, no.
No cards.
Yeah, I know what's supposed to happen. I just don't remember how to get there. But, no, it's been the fact that I did a lot of trial work was a real nice, easy transition for me. It just seems natural now to run a courtroom based upon the things I picked up from good judges and the things I ignored from bad judges that I saw in my career.
And you said you've done court cases in multiple counties. Are there really big differences between counties when you go into their courts?
Incredible differences. You would think with one revised code and one set of rules of evidence that every court would be the same, but it's crazy how different every court is. I didn't realize when I put in my office in Loudonville My wife's family was from the Loudonville School District, but Western Holmes County, and that just seemed natural to put an office there. That most attorneys put their office at a county seat. You know, they put their office around a courthouse and practice in that county. By putting my office in Loudonville, there were five county seats that were all 20, 25 miles from Loudonville. So in any day, I could be in Mansfield, Worcester, Mount Vernon, you know, Ashland, Millersburg, sometimes all five in one day. And so I was traveling to a bunch of counties, but still having what I would consider a local practice. But
do you think that benefited you more?
Very much so. I was in those courts enough to be treated like a local attorney, but infrequent enough to still sort of come in as that out-of-town expert, you know, not the local guys sitting there, you know, on the bench waiting for their case to be called. You come in, the judge treats you with respect, and you leave and go on to another county. So, yeah, and seeing different judges, seeing different courts, seeing different procedures can only benefit someone that's trying cases. I mean, there was just such a difference in judges and prosecutors from different counties that you learn to deal with it all.
And were you always just on the defense side, or did you do any other work there?
Yeah, I did some prosecuting as well. For 5 years, I would handle jury trials and motion hearings for the Ashland Law Director. So in that court, I would practice as a defense attorney. In fact, 1 week I had a Wednesday jury trial. I was prosecuting a DUI, calling the breathalyzer a scientifically accurate machine. And then the next day, Thursday, I was defending a DUI, arguing that it was an inaccurate machine. And Judge Fridline at the time said, you know, you need to just pick a side. You've got to stop doing this. But I thought, you know, a lawyer should be able to argue either side of a case. A good lawyer, you should be able to hand them a case and say, here, take this position or take that position. It doesn't mean you personally vouch for that position. You're arguing one side of a case. And so I enjoyed that, and I got to know the officers, so I would defend in Ashland, but I also knew a lot of the law enforcement officers because I would prosecute with them as well. And like any small town, same here in Millersburg, you have a relationship with your officers. It's not so combative or adversarial that, you know, they hate you, you hate them. You all live together, you work together, you know how the system works, and you can still be friends with someone you're cross-examining. So I always enjoyed the small town aspect of practicing law. I know the law enforcement officers and appreciated them, but still, we had our jobs to do.
It's kind of interesting that they don't teach that ability to do both sides in law school. You would think that would be kind of a priority.
I always thought it was. Yeah, people leave law school and say, I want to be a defense attorney, or I want to be a prosecutor, or I want to be, you know, a personal injury lawyer. And okay, but those are all directions you can take your skills, but you have to develop the skills.
And do you think being a lawyer and a judge that a lot of it is just that lived experience?
I think so. I had some wild years when I was younger. Kids used to tell me to, you know, tell stories when you used to be bad, dad, which, you know, if I could go back, I certainly would change. But yeah, I think those experiences form who we are now. So, you know, as a lawyer, you can deal with politicians and, you know, business owners and the white collar country club type. But at the same time, you're also dealing with people charged with a crime who are drug addicts or thieves. And you've got to be able to talk to them as well. So the ability to move around the different segments of society and interact with them, understand them, and be able to articulate for them is not a very common skill, but I think it's one that benefited me.
And have you had any cases come through, this kind of popped into my head, that you had something similar when you were a lawyer, and now you're seeing this case come upon you in as a judge and have to look at it differently and maybe choose a different thought process than what you would have went with as the lawyer?
Yeah, I mean, a lawyer has one side they're supposed to argue. So it doesn't matter what your personal opinion is. You're paid to argue, take a position. You know, so I know when I have a prosecutor and a defense attorney both arguing that the law favors their position, one of them isn't right. One of them is arguing, you know, for their client, and one of them, you know. So yeah, you learn to decipher and find the law yourself sometimes if you have to. You learn from arguments which ones are coming from a place where I want you to do this, or judge, you have to do this because this is what the law is. So yeah, that it benefits you having practiced law to listen to lawyers and decide who you're going to trust or believe.
And have you adjusted as a judge in the 10 years that you've been in the position and maybe doing things a little different than when you started?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I took the bench and I was so high and mighty and so proud of myself. And I remember the first day of criminal arraignments, going through the charge. That's when people come in who are charged with a crime that week, and they come in and answer to the charge. And, you know, here I am now as a judge looking at them and explaining the law to them and talking down to them. And I realized when we were done the first day that everyone who came before me had done something I had done myself when I was maybe a misguided youth. And that humbled me instantly, because that told me, you know, we are all the same here. I'm no better than anybody else. This robe doesn't give me the power or the right to do anything to somebody that's outside of the law or outside of what they deserve. And, you know, I do have people around the courthouse that can get mad if I'm nice to somebody who has a long criminal history. But, you know, my feeling is we're all going to have to answer to how we treat people. And I want to treat someone the way I'd want to be treated if that was my son, my brother, my sister, or myself, you know. And so, yeah, it's humbled me having been in it to now know, you know, I can decide the issues. I'm not judging people on who they are. I'm just judging the issue that's in front of me.
And what does the Ohio Revised Code say versus what they're saying?
Yep. Yeah, I always thought it would be hard as a judge. How do you do if you're not sure, you know, what happened in a case? How do you rule? But the nice thing is, you know, one side in every argument has a burden of proof. And if you're not convinced that that side is correct, then you can't rule in their favor. And so right off the bat, I had to rule in favor of people I didn't really like or rule against people that I did like. But going back to that standard, what's expected of a judge, that makes it a lot easier, one, to live with yourself because you know you're following the rules. But two, I'm not doing this for the approval or for someone to smile and say thank you or, you know, I'm glad you did that because we're friends. It's like, no, I did this because this is what the law says and this is what I had to do. And yeah, that's hard. You don't want to rule against somebody you don't like, but you're expected to. You have to.
I was just going to ask, do you think doing small town judging makes it harder to do that separation than if you were in a city where you knew nobody coming in? Different people every time.
Yes and no. Because in a large city, you basically have to be campaigning all the time. The last thing you want is bad publicity in a big city, because that's all they're going to remember when the next election comes around. You're always contested in a big city. You have to always be campaigning. In a small town, you're not always contested. But most judges, I believe, are actively involved in the community. And so they know those people. And I think that can be hard for them. I'm sure it's hard in other counties as well. I wouldn't accuse Sean or Tom Lee of being in that situation here, but I purposely chose to not be an actively involved person in the community here. When I get off work, I go home. I've got things I want to do at home, things I need to do. I'm not out, you know, going to restaurants for lunch, shaking hands, greeting everybody, treating like I have to campaign every day, because you do create those alliances then that would be hard to ignore when you're a judge. It's easier for me. Most people come in are strangers, even if they're business owners or they're well known in the community. I don't know them, and I like that. That's easier for me.
That separation.
I think it's important. Yeah. When I was interested in running for judge, when Tom White had been judge in common police court, he pulled me aside to say, listen, you need to know that becoming a judge can be very isolating. You know, if you're very actively involved in the Bar Association and enjoy the camaraderie of lawyers, once you become judge, it can be kind of isolating. Well, you know, my office was always in Loudonville in Ashland County, so I didn't have those ties to the local attorneys. And to me, that isolation was a good thing. It wasn't something I was afraid of. That's how I live. You know, we kind of live like it's been COVID for the last 30 years, as far as not doing much socially, but yeah.
And it lets you have a work-life balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. That's important. Mm-hmm. You know, I can remember having some very rough cases as a defense attorney, you know, cases of child rape and child murder and coming home to my own small children. And you've got to be able to separate that, you know, the best version of you is who needs to come home every day, not, you know, who's in the office, because you've got to be able to forget that stuff.
Hang it on the tree outside.
Yep, leave it and go in the door. So, yeah.
Well, we've got more to discuss with Judge Andy Hyde here on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM. We're going to dig back into more here with Judge Andy Hyde from the Municipal Court here in Holmes County. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays, and I kind of mentioned that we're breaking down your barriers here and your separation, but it's really good to learn about how your court works, how it works as you being the judge there and understanding your thought process on where people are heading to when they go into the municipal courtroom.
Yeah, I mean, people sometimes are very scared. They've never been in court. We see a lot of traffic tickets, so we see a high volume of people every week who've been charged, and sometimes that's their first contact with law enforcement. So I get people in that are very scared, very nervous, don't know what to expect, and we try to have a court. We play a video to explain their rights every time they come in. Hopefully it's somewhat informal, but I try to put them at ease. You know, I will tell you what the maximum penalty is for your charge, but that doesn't mean that's what you're going to get if you plead. So we try to address that newness or that concern that most people have when they come to court. I can't make it a pleasant experience all the time, but I can at least take away some of that fear.
Give them the worst, and then it's not as bad when it's not.
Yeah, right. That's what usually scares them. When I say the maximum penalty for their charge, I see people look like they're going to faint in court, and I have to say, well, I'm not going to do that for you. I don't know the facts, but I rarely, you know, impose 500 hours of community service on a traffic offense, but the law says you can.
And so you were a lawyer before stepping into the judge position, and what do you have to do to maintain this? Do you still have to maintain like your lawyer abilities, or how does it work with judge?
Yeah, judges fall under a different category than lawyers, but we both have same requirements. There's continuing education we have to obtain every 2 years. It makes sense to attend the classes that are geared to judges because that's usually the most relevant information, but there are, you know, criminal cases you can go to as a judge, DUI training. There's things you can do for specific parts of your practice, but I usually meet my quota every 2 years by going to the judge conferences that they present. There's a 3-day conference every winter for municipal court judges, and then they usually do a summer conference, which I don't go to. And then there are general conferences for all judges, and I find a lot of that information really isn't that relevant to municipal court. I mean, a probate judge, a municipal court judge, and a common pleas judge all have different things they need to learn. So I try to maximize my attendance at the municipal court judge seminars because it's geared towards us. A lot of retired judges or the judges that love research are always happy to get up there and discuss the new issues in law or new ways to do things or things they've done in their courts that would benefit other judges.
And law is adjusting, so you have to keep up with that.
You have to. You cannot ever assume that just because the law was, you know, this way before, it's that way now. It changes, and we get alerts and I get updates from Municipal Judge Association. Here's a change in a law that's going to affect your practice. Here's a new law coming through that's going to affect you, and that's really nice. It's invaluable if you can keep track of that stuff so you know what's coming, when it's going to be effective, and how it's going to apply to your court.
And you said you do not have any magistrates, so you're doing all of the cases in the municipal on your own.
Yes, I have a bailiff who kind of runs things for me, Missy Shaner, who was there with Judge Irving, and the smartest thing I ever did was keep her there when I started. I mean, the guy that comes in a position like that and wants to clean house is a fool because you've got the benefit of seeing how things were done, and she runs everything for me that I can focus on the law, which is nice. But the commissioners, you know, they told me when I got this job, other judges said, you're going to fight for your budget with your commissioners every day, and you can, a judge can actually order his budget. Even if they disagree, you can force them to pay you what you want them to pay. And I've never had that problem with our commissioners. It's always been a very amicable situation. In fact, they have offered funding every year for me to hire a court administrator, someone else to help with the paperwork. But because I'm not that busy and I have time during the week, my feeling is I can stay and do those entries myself. I don't need to have the county pay another employee in the courthouse. Between Missy and myself, we can get everything done. And there's nothing, you know, we need to stay late and do today. We're able to keep up with everything.
Now, what all would fall under a municipal court judge's budget?
Well, the clerks are not part of my staff. So Rhonda Steimel is the common pleas clerk, and by statute, she also oversees the municipal court. So the staff there are hers. It's myself and my bailiff. So our budget is our salaries. I'm paid partly by the county and partly by the state. She's paid by the county. And then we have the expenses I will need to call in. Like when I do the 3-day conference, I need to have another judge come in. So we have to have a budget to pay judges to come in. If I get sick or something happens, I rarely do. I don't think I've taken more than 2 vacations for the last 10 years and needed a replacement because I don't like the fact that the county has to pay more if I do that. But that's in our budget, supplies, computers, that sort of thing. So I think we spend less than they give us every year. And because of that, we've never had a problem. If we had a need, we can go to the commissioners and they're happy to take care of us.
And that's a good relationship to maintain.
It's a great relationship. I couldn't be happier. I've never needed anything. And when you run things that way, then they don't hesitate if you go to them and say, we have a special need. We actually were able to contribute some money to the clock tower restoration because I had it sitting in a special projects fund that hadn't been touched. We didn't need it. The courtroom had been renovated before I took over. I'm not one that needs to renovate every couple of years. And
you don't need the latest trend?
No, my office is full of old boxes and stuff from home. I probably need to clean up. But no, so we were able to send some money back to the commissioners to help in that project, over $100,000, which was felt nice for a project that was that expensive.
Well, and the courthouse is where you have your courtroom, and it's a place to show pride and be welcoming to have people enjoy as well.
I love our courthouse. There's some counties where, you know, the courts are in a strip mall or in a business type setting or a business building, and I just love the old style stone courthouse that we have here. It's historic.
You can't beat that.
No, I love driving in the morning. I can see that tower sticking up through the clouds some mornings.
The fog. Mm-hmm. I get the same. I'm heading the same direction. So yep. I totally understand that view. You can't beat it.
No, I've got one child that's an artist, and I told her someday she can give me a painting of the courthouse so I can take it. You know, when I'm done, I want to have that hanging on my wall. So. Yeah, I'll remember the place when I'm going.
Right there in the center of the courtroom.
Yeah, right.
And we've got more to learn here. We've got a few more segments here with Judge Hyde on Focus Fridays on WKLM. I'm Melissa Patrick. We've got more here with Judge Andy Hyde on Focus Fridays. I'm Melissa Patrick for WKLM. And we've learned about all the background stuff and being a judge. So when you head in for the day, what is a day in the life of a municipal judge?
If there is such thing as a typical day, yeah.
I hear that a lot with the people I interview.
Right. We schedule things in our court to follow a certain pattern. So that pattern is usually pretty standard every week. Monday morning will be my civil matters. So Monday we'll have, I have case management conferences, which are hearings with the attorneys on civil cases. How is the case coming? Do you need any orders from me? Do we need to move this thing along? Are you ready for trial? Can you guys work this out? That sort of thing. So it's an informal discussion. And I'll have sometimes, you know, 15, 20 of those set on a Monday morning. We'll also set our small claims trials Monday. And then, so there's times when I can come in, our evictions are set on Monday. So I can come in on a Monday morning and sometimes have a long day of civil stuff. And sometimes there's not much depending on what got worked out and what was set. And then usually leave the afternoons open for hearings, motion hearings, or bench trials. Tuesday is when we have our pre-trials, which are Tuesday morning is an informal discussion with attorneys and the prosecutor. Can this case get worked out? Do we need a trial? Are there any legal issues? That sort of thing. So we'll take a lot of pleas on a Tuesday morning to hopefully clear up a lot of the criminal docket. Tuesday afternoons will be bench trials and motion hearings. And then Wednesday is our arraignments every week. That's where law enforcement knows any tickets, any new criminal charges, anyone's been arrested on a complaint, the jail or the law enforcement officer will set that for the next coming Wednesday. So any Wednesday can be, like this morning was fairly busy. Next Wednesday may not be busy. It just depends on what was charged that week. And then I'm doing this interview with you, and then I've got to go back for a bench trial this afternoon. Thursdays we leave open for jury trials. I think September and October I have a lot of jury trials set. So those Thursdays will be swallowed up. And Fridays, we try to leave open because I need to see somebody if they've been arrested before the weekend. You want to see somebody within 3 days of their arrest. So if someone gets arrested on a Wednesday or Thursday, and if I miss them on Friday, then they're going to sit till Monday, which I don't want. I want to be able to at least address bond or see if they need an attorney. So Fridays, I always come in for paperwork. And if we have anyone in jail, address that at that time. So that's a fairly standard week for me. You know, jury trial makes it a lot more complicated. A lot of hearings in the afternoon makes it a lot busier week. But it's different every week as far as the numbers of cases, but that's the guideline we follow, usually in setting cases.
So it's going to be nice to have that change up of it's not always the same. So it's not always like, who makes the donut? Who made the donut?
Right. And the fact that it all fits that same guideline, every case is so different and every case is interesting or not interesting depending on the facts. So I know that general idea of how the week is going to go, but every case makes it much less or more interesting depending on the facts. So
now, is that a schedule that you set up or is that a typical scheduled for a municipal court with the arraignments on Wednesdays?
No, that's something we do that works for us. Some courts are so busy. The courts that have an interstate coming through their county usually have to handle a lot more traffic matters than we do. So I think Ashland does Tuesday and Friday mornings for arraignments. I think Wayne County does a couple of arraignments a week. We can do a Wednesday, and if we need to go long that Wednesday, we can, but we can get by with doing one day of arraignments. So, yeah. Most courts have magistrates or multiple judges as well. So one judge can handle the civil stuff, one judge can handle trials. It's sort of like a splitting up of the workload, which we don't have that luxury. I don't want it. We don't need it. But it's nice to sort of put cases in certain pockets that I can deal with at the time.
It kind of helps you keep your head straight on what you're looking at, so you're not bouncing from traffic to civil to this and that. You can set your focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know on a jury trial, I don't want to have breakfast because I'm going to get tired if I'm sitting all day. So it's certain depending
on. You don't want to doze off on the bench.
I don't want a donut on Thursday morning if we have a trial. No. So, yeah, it helps me to know what to expect too.
Now, do you see a lot of jury trials in your case? I know in common pleas, a lot of those get settled out of court. Is it the same way with municipal, or do you see a lot more of those jury trials happen?
No, we don't see a lot. And that's a good thing when you have prosecutors and defense attorneys who both see the case the same way. They can usually tell if there's a problem. From the state's perspective, we want a plea bargain or, dismiss. We don't want to go to trial if we don't think we're going to win. From a defense standpoint, yeah, they can make our case. It'd be stupid to go to trial. We want to try to plead or work something out. So it's a sign of an efficient system when you don't have those trials, because the trial is when, a prosecutor thinks he can win the case, a defense attorney thinks he can win the case, and so we set it for trial and the jury has to decide. So usually most cases are worked out. So of the five or six that we have set in the next 2 months, I wouldn't be surprised if they all get worked out or if one or two need to go, but I doubt all of them will. And we usually don't set it for a jury trial until the sides just say we cannot work anything out anymore. So there's no agreement. Either my client's difficult to deal with, they won't plead anything, or the state can't make their case, or the state saying, no, we're not willing to, treat our victim this way and reduce or dismiss, so we need a trial. So by the time we set it for a trial, we've tried every avenue to resolve it. There's nothing left now but a trial. Then the issue is you want to try it to the judge or try it to a jury. A jury trial is going to take all day. A trial to a judge usually is, an hour or two at the most.
That's the bench trial.
That's a bench trial, right. I like those because you lose all that formality in the procedure of a jury. You don't have to type up jury instructions. We don't have all the stuff you have to do with a jury. It's just here's the facts and try it to a judge. And I think I'm a fair judge. I mean, there's some courts you never would try it to a judge because you knew,
they're going to leave.
Yeah, he's already got the guilty verdict filled out before you start. So to me, it's a testament to me when attorneys say, yeah, we're happy to try this in front of you instead of a jury. So there's an expense to a jury trial. It takes at least one day, if not more. It's really nice to resolve a case with a bench trial instead of a jury trial.
What's the longest jury trial you've had? How long did it go?
As a judge here, we've never had one go more than a day. We've stayed late instead of coming back in the morning. We've asked the jurors, would you rather stay here till 6 o'clock, or do you want to leave now and come back in the morning?
Jurors most will always of them say, stay late.
Who are missing work said they would rather
been
stay
there,
late.
Done that.
Yeah. Yep. So, no, we've never had one go into a second day. Common pleas can get, 2-3 week-long trials sometimes, but we don't have those sort of facts.
And that has to be nice, that it's a little easier to get through the cases.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think so.
And so we have one last segment with Judge Hyde here on A Focus Fridays. We're going to take a quick little break, and we'll be more. I'm Melissa Patrick with WKLM with Holmes County Municipal Judge Andy Hyde. We've got one last segment here with Judge Andy Hyde from the Holmes County Municipal Court. I'm Melissa Patrick with Focus Fridays. And you said a little bit earlier in one of our segments that you try to keep yourself separate so you're not creating those ties. So you aren't a member of any boards or anything like that.
Right. I'm involved in a black powder shooting club, and I do historical reenacting. So I'm a treasurer for a shooting club down in Kilbuck, but nothing, none of the community-wide boards. And I've had the opportunity, and some judges do that kind of stuff, but I really feel like, maybe it's not a conflict or a violation of the judicial ethics to be on that board. But the more people you interact with, the more close relationships you build, the more businesses you're involved in, do create those ties that judges are supposed to ignore. So it's easy for me to say, no, I just choose not to be on those boards or be involved in those groups.
Now, are you in any judges groups?
No, judges can be on judge associations, small networking groups of, you know, criminal law, traffic law, that sort of thing. So yeah, most judges are involved with other judges, but we'd never see them in front of us. And it's just trying to make the law better, the procedure better, all working to make our profession better.
Both so you can reach out if you need, like, I have this. Has anybody had this?
Judges are always on the phone with other judges. Yeah, that's fairly common. In fact, I asked our Municipal Judge Association maybe to look into starting up a listserv where judges can post questions and other judges could respond to it. I think there's concern about, you know, that being public because, boy, this judge asked a lot of questions. He doesn't know what he's doing. But at the same time, but there's judges who see things every day that some judges, you know, all of a sudden just had this issue pop up in front of them. And instead of doing the research and reinventing the wheel, talk to judges that have already handled it. So
now you just mentioned being public. You are in a public office and public record is important to maintain as a judge. And that affects things when it comes to the internet and things like that. And so you have to be careful with that as well.
Yeah. Yep. We created a Facebook page for me when I was running for judge. A friend helped me set up a Facebook page running for judge. He's since passed on. I have no idea how to cancel it, so I'm not actively on the page. There's 10 million friend requests.
That
I've not responded to because I don't know. I mean, I just want to go away at this point. But I try to avoid the social media because as a public official, you are available out there for public comment. And I've had a couple cases, two that really stand out to me, where the public comment was so aggressive and so incorrect that one, I responded to correct them and was told later I shouldn't have. And then one, I did what they say, you know, type that response and then don't send it because, you know, I wanted to clear the record. But the public, I don't mind public being critical of me or my role because I'm comfortable in what I do. But sometimes when that's based on misinformation or things that aren't accurate, yeah, you really want to clean that up because you don't want people thinking less of you for something that actually didn't happen. That's frustrating.
That's one of those life in a small town things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it happens big town too, but you see that a lot in a small town that you see information out there and you're like,
Yeah.
I understand that, keeping that position.
Well, we talked about how, you know, isolating I am of myself. And when I came to this position, I had not been, you know, a Millersburg attorney for years or Holmes County attorney for years. So we had a case that was up in Common Pleas involving a sex offense with a man and a young girl involving alcohol. And they got close to trial and realized that their witness slash victim who was intoxicated may not be able to make the case and prove this happened. And the judge wasn't willing to allow any sort of plea bargaining on that case because it was pretty serious. So they came down to me and said, listen, can we file this in your court, have the defendant plead to the charge, have them register as a sex offender, but no jail. This is what we want to do to get that registration, get that conviction that we can't do upstairs. I said, sure. I mean, if this is the only way you guys can get both defense attorney and prosecutor want to do it this way, let's do it that way. I'm okay with that. And then afterwards, there's a gentleman fairly critical of most things that happened in Holmes County and Millersburg, and he posted that because I was treating this wealthy child from a local wealthy family differently than everyone else, you know, I'm part of this problem of the system. And I didn't know this kid. I didn't know the family name. I didn't know that they were wealthy. I was doing what the prosecutor and the defense attorney were asking me to do. And it was so frustrating for me to think and seeing comments, you know, people were saying, you know, yeah, why would the judge do that? That's what's wrong with the system. And, you know, the rich people and the local families always get treated this way, none of which was true. And I really wanted to respond to that. I really wanted to. And I thought, I can't. It's out there. It's wrong, but it's out there. And hopefully it'll just go away over time. Because you do care how people see your ability to do your job. I mean, they've got to elect you. And that's frustrating. But I just let it go.
And as a judge, most of what you do is public record. They can look up and see.
Anything we do, anything we say is on the record, yeah.
And there's only a few times where you can seal a case to where people can't get into that information, correct?
Right. Yeah, people are allowed certain convictions. You can come in and ask to seal that after time. And you basically need to convince the judge that criminal act was out of character for me. I'm trying to move on with my life. It really affects me. That's not so important. The state needs to maintain that record. Please let me seal that so I can say, you know, I never was convicted of a crime. And we do it, but I've also said no certain times too. I mean, someone's in nursing or working at a nursing home and they have, you know, they've stolen drugs or stolen from an elderly person before. That's not one I'm really interested in.
Or elderly abuse or something.
I think there is a purpose to maintain records of convictions. We should know. Certainly if you're hiring somebody, you'd want to know if they have something like that in their background.
And if anybody ever has any questions about why you chose something, you'll talk to people and answer questions that you can legally.
Yeah, I'm comfortable. We're not supposed to discuss pending cases, but I'm comfortable discussing cases that have occurred before or cases that are not in front of me that are in other courts. I'm comfortable. I think we have a role to explain the system to people and let people see more of how the system works, and I'm comfortable doing that.
Because a lot of what people see about the judicial system is the negative side of it. They don't see the whole thing. They're not sitting in the courtrooms, and sometimes just that explanation, well, this is a technical detail. Would you have rather this happened?
Yeah.
This is why we had to go this route.
Right, right. And that's, you know, the most vocal person usually has the largest audience. So if that person is critical, then that's what people are hearing. That's kind of why I wanted to do this with you, because I thought, what a great idea to just explain who I am, what the court is, how we work, and hopefully people that listen will learn a little more about municipal court.
Judge Andy Hyde isn't so mysterious anymore.
There's still a mysterious side to me. People don't need to know about that. Yeah. So when I go home, I run my sawmill and work on things, and that's where I'm really happy. So I enjoy my job, but I get happy at home.
And are there any last comments before we close out our time together here?
I've enjoyed being the judge for the last 10 years. I hope to do this for a little while longer. We've got at least 5.5 years left in this term, and I've enjoyed my time. From somebody that did not want to live in Ohio, I grew up in Ohio and I left and swore I'd never come back. I'm very happy here, and this has been a great place to live and raise my family. I'm real happy here.
Yeah, we have to be careful when we say those nevers.
Yeah, it's not always what we want to do.
Well, thank you so much for joining in with us.
Of course, Melissa. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
That was Judge Andrew Hyde of the Municipal Court in Holmes County. For Focus Fridays here on WKLM, I'm Melissa Patrick. Focus Fridays has been brought to you by Hovrens Insurance, Holmes Siding, Rhodey's IGA, Millersburg Electric, Pomerine Hospital, MRV Siding, and Millersburg Tire. If you happen to miss an episode of Focus Fridays here on WKLM, go to the website, WKLMFM.com, click on the Focus Fridays icon, and then click on the episode that you missed from there. Make sure to tune in at 9 a.m. each Friday to catch the episode of Focus Fridays right here on your hometown radio, 95.3 WKLM.